What item are they on here? Four A?
Four A.
We are started.
Okay, we're starting the call action.
Okay, we're officially calling the Library Advisory Committee to order. We have some guests with us tonight, and so we are going to call them out of order and move them up to the front. And thank you to Dietmar, our councilman, for being here with us tonight as well. So we're gonna start with agenda item 4A, the Oregon Government Ethics Law. And David Allen and Peggy Hawker are here today to talk to us about that.
And for those of you who don't know who Peggy and David are, Peggy's our city recorder and special projects. Peggy, special projects, I always wanna call you director.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay, special projects director, and then David Allen is our city's attorney.
And if you wonder why Laura keeps looking to the side, I am sitting to the left of her, so she is looking at me.
That's true. So actually what we're going to be talking about today is not just ethics. We thought that since we had so many new people on this committee that we would do sort of a committee orientation that includes only one slide on ethics, because ethics is about a five-minute discussion. So I put together a PowerPoint presentation, and I'm going to run through it. It's pretty short. I know you've got a lot of business to do, and then I'll just talk about the different slides, and then David can weigh in on each one if he has anything to add. So let me share my screen somewhere. Oh, here it is.
Peggy, you're completely black. You can't see your face.
I know. Well, that's by design. I don't want anybody to know how old I am. Actually, it doesn't get much lighter in this room, unfortunately. I mean, darker in this room, even if I shut my other blind. I've got two blinds closed and one is open. So I apologize for this, and I'm not in the witness protection program. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and do a very brief committee orientation. This is for the library board, and we're going to talk a little bit about the creation of the library board, because the library board was created by ordinance. It's a section in the Newport Municipal Code, which I think is in the next slide. And the next slide also contains the duties of the library board. And we'll talk a little bit about public meetings, public records, and ethics, and then you'll be on your way to more important business. So I wrote on here, and I can email this to Laura, who can share it with all of you, but the municipal code provisions related to the library board, you know, just describe the composition of the board. So it's seven people. Whoops. What am I doing here? So it's seven people, and one of them is a high school student, and one of them is a representative of the cultural diversity, and the library director also serves on your board, but she's a non-voting member. And so the duties of the library board are to prepare policies on library operation and service, including general library operation, acquisition, use, and disposition of library property. The library board is an advisory board to the city council, so these are the duties that you are prescribed in the municipal code. But your overall goal is to do these things and then share them with council if you've got any particular actions. David, do you want to weigh in on that a little bit more?
No, I think they pretty much covered it, Peggy.
Okay. So, and again, if you're interested, I can send this to you. Does anybody have any questions so far? All right, good. So the next thing we'll talk about is public meetings. And the types of meetings that you would have are your regular meetings, like your regular monthly meetings. And some committees in the city have sort of working groups or subcommittees. And that's when things get a little more difficult to manage if you do create subcommittees, because an actual subcommittee with perhaps a quorum of your board would then put you into the position of being a public body again, and you'd have to go through all the public processes for a regular meeting. For example, when you have a library board meeting or any city meeting, we have to give notice to the public and to the committee. We have to hold that meeting in an appropriate space and location and a geographic location. For example, we can't hold our library board meetings in Toledo, even though maybe we might want to. David?
Yeah, one comment on that. So if, and I'm not sure if the library board has done this in the past, but if the board wants to create a subcommittee, then that should be done by official action. And it can even be less than a quorum of the library board. It could even be three members, but it's an official action that creates in those three or four members, whatever the number is, an official governing body that then is subject to notice. So that would be my comment is, if you want a subcommittee, do it informal, do a formal action at a full committee meeting, and then let Peggy or whoever the staff person is know what that is, and they can then make arrangements for having the meeting noticed and meet all the other public meeting requirements.
Yes, and if you want to do that, do it after June.
Well,
I don't know for sure when I'm leaving, but it is someday. All of our public bodies, our advisory committees and City Council, Planning Commission, Urban Renewal, they all have to have agendas for the meetings, and the agenda has to have enough information in it so that if I was a member of the public and I was looking at it, I would know what you were going to be discussing at a meeting. And each agenda item, because we use an agenda management system here, can have supporting documentation attached to it. One thing I would say about you know, meetings that we used to have in the past, and there have been a lot of positive changes, but, you know, back in the day, people would build agendas and they would call it, you know, roll call, new business and old business. And that just doesn't work because when the public looks at that, they don't have a clue what we're going to be talking about. So we try to be as clear as possible on that. David?
Let me add some. Yeah. So on that, everything's done pretty much electronically now. I mean, Dietmar knows as a council member, very seldom are hard copy packets sent out. It's done electronically, which means the public has access to the same information the council has access to that's posted on the website. So if an agenda item has documentation that the council or a committee has to consider, that needs to be posted on the agenda and kept on the agenda as a public record, so we have a transparent process in which the public can view what the committee or council members are viewing in reaching a decision. So that would be my input would be the folks that the staff people that staff committee meetings, they need to make sure that if there's an agenda item that requires supporting documentation that needs to be incorporated in the actual packet itself that's posted electronically, so the committee and the public has the same access to view those documents.
Thanks, David. And also, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, all of our committees, all of the city's standing committees, plus Council, Planning Commission, and Urban Renewal, they all use the same agenda management system. So honestly, it's made life easier for many of us. So public attendance at meetings, the Oregon public meeting law is a public attendance law, not a public participation law. So if, and you probably don't have it too much where people want to come and speak at your meetings. It's more common, I'd say, in planning commission meetings and city council meetings, potentially urban renewal meetings. But the public has no particular right to offer testimony or comment. But as a matter of practice here in Newport, we've added public comment to all of our agendas, all of our committee agendas and council agendas, and the city council and all of our committees allows that. I mean, you can have your own rules for public participation, public comment, like if you want to limit it to 3 minutes, which is what the city council does. But typically in my senses, it's probably not an issue with the library board, but if it becomes an issue, you can certainly set some guidelines there. And then control of meeting. The committee chair has the authority to control the meeting, and that control extends over the audience, equipment, such as cameras, tape recorders, et cetera. And, you know, this is probably not so much an issue any longer since all of our meetings are live streamed and shown live on Charter Channel 190. But back in the day, people used to come and they would bring tape recorders and they'd set up cameras and on and on and on. But if something like that occurs, the chair has the authority to, you know, make sure there's control at the meeting. Okay, voting at meetings, and this is a little bit surprising, I think, to some committees, but official actions have to be taken by a public vote, and the votes have to be recorded in the minutes. So secret ballots are prohibited, but you can take it. I mean, you can have a written vote if you want to, but it has to include your board member's name, and it has to be announced verbally during the meeting with the results. So, for example, our city council at the beginning of the year selects a council president. And if they use written ballots, which they can, then I or whoever replaces me will have to say, well, Councillor Goble voted for. And so there's no secret. It's, you know, you can write it down. I don't know what purpose it serves to do it that way, but sometimes people just feel more comfortable about it. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I think sometimes folks just want to do it in writing rather than, you know, raising their hands. And that's been done in the past, but it's really up to each council every year as to how they want to proceed on that particular issue.
So, but again, that applies to committees. And, you know, I think that sometimes it's uncomfortable when, especially when you might be interviewing committee members, board members, if you had a vacancy and you were interviewing, sometimes it's hard to actually say in front of them, well, I recommend that this person be forwarded to the mayor for appointment. So you could, you know, you can do it in a written manner. You just have, somebody has to read them. The next one, and this is really important. So, and we urge council to do this, is read your meeting materials before the meeting so that during the meeting you can understand what's going on and make informed decision. If I I don't always do this, so I shouldn't say this, but on the committees that I staff, I try to write staff reports on each item. We certainly do that on council packets, but anyway, our agendas and packets are typically available 3 days before the meeting. So if we have a city council meeting on a Monday, our packets are available on Thursday and posted on our website. Minutes. So minutes have to be taken at all city advisory committee meetings, and they don't have to be what I write, but they need to include the names of the members present, the motions, proposals, measures, whatever it is that you're talking about, and the disposition of those items, the results of all votes, the substance of any discussion, and reference to any document that's discussed. And minutes are not verbatim transcripts. We're not, you know, we don't have the capacity to do that, and it's not necessary. So as long as you get these critical pieces into your minutes, you're good. Any questions? David, you want to say anything?
Yeah, I would say that with the minutes, you know, in the past, as you know, Peggy, before electronic capabilities, you know, the minutes was a lot of what people relied on. They could ask for a tape recording, but that was always, you know, took a while. So right now with live streaming and our audio and video capabilities, the minutes are important. But if folks actually want to see what was discussed in more detail, they can just go to our website and link in to the audio or video, and that gives them a better idea of what was discussed.
That's exactly right. And one of the things I think it's one of the more positive things that has happened since COVID is that we started to hold all of our meetings in the council chambers, which allows us to live stream them and also to show them on Charter Channel 190. The live stream gets uploaded to the city website, so anybody can go back and watch those, assuming all the technology works. So anybody have questions at this point?
Yeah, this is Gretchen Havner. I'm just curious what the rules are going to be moving forward about having our meetings. I understand they need to be in council chamber, but are we going to be allowed to have our members here in person?
That's a good question. And it actually, this was discussed Monday night at the council meeting, and we had a draft policy. We're going to be holding in-person meetings after April 4th. And if there's a committee person who's physically incapable of coming to the meeting in person, then they would be allowed to participate virtually. But our goal is to get back to in-person meetings. Now, I had drafted a policy for Monday night's meeting that didn't really reflect the wishes of the council, so I'm in the process of revising that, and they're going to look at it again on March 21st. But the goal is that after April 4th, we will be returning to in-person meetings here in the council chambers.
Thank you.
You're welcome. David, did you want to say something?
Yeah, my understanding is all committee meetings will now be held in the council chambers for that very reason. I know Conference Room A was the typical place, and, you know, I know for the library board sometimes at the library, or for the 60-plus advisory committee over at the 60-plus center. But I think the goal is to get all the committees from now on moving forward in the council chambers for the reason of live streaming. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, it's interesting because you would think, well, who would watch these meetings? But we've gotten so many positive comments about the accessibility of our committee meetings and our council meetings and all of our meetings being accessible after the, you know, after the meeting on the live stream that gets uploaded. And also people watch it, which I don't know if I'll be doing that after I retire, but anyway.
So my understanding was the library board meetings were held in the library. Is that correct before COVID hit?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think that it's just going to be a little bit of an adjustment for the committees to sort of migrate to City Hall, but it's actually a pretty good meeting venue. And I think that, you know, we'll all get accustomed to it, especially if we get heat in there. So moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about public records, and we don't have file cabinets like that anymore, do we, David?
Well, actually, mine are all full from previous city attorneys, and I still have to take a look and clean some of that stuff out.
I know. I was just kidding because I know you do it. So what is a public record? A public record is any information that the governing body has, regardless of its physical form or characteristic, that relates to the conduct of the public's business and that is prepared, owned, used, or retained by a public body. I didn't put this in here, I don't think, but, you know, the documents that we keep are, we do dispose of documents based on a retention schedule that's provided by the Oregon State Archivist. So there's that. Any questions so far? So the public records policy of the city, and it's really of the state, so every person has a right to inspect any non-exempt public record of a public body in Oregon. It's a disclosure law rather than a confidentiality law, and it doesn't matter who's asking or why they want a particular record most of the time. Right, David, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, so this is sometimes where people aren't clear. So every document that is related to city business is a public record. Now, the question then becomes, is that public record disclosable? Is there some type of confidentiality provision in it or some other exemption that's listed in the statute? So that's really how we look at it. Public record, is it exempt? Or is it non-exempt? And then we go from there as far as either disclosing it or redacting certain portions of it before a person makes a public records request and we provide that record or records to them.
Right. So the next slide talks about the types of public records, and I kind of referred to that a little bit before, but all of these are types of public records, you know, handwritten, recorded, just any kind of file, a computer file, microfiche file, emails, instant messages, audio and videotapes, text messages. One of the things that I've been doing when we have a public city council meeting is I turn off the chat because that would be something that we would have to retain if the council started chatting with each other. Plus, we don't want people doing that and somehow creating a a meeting if you're having this discussion about a public item privately. It all needs to be done in public. And any questions, anybody? Okay, we have a public records request policy. It's been in effect for a while, January 2nd of 2018, and it is it was adopted by resolution number 3781A, and the A is on there because I screwed up and had two numbers that were 3781. And this policy is on our website. It also includes a public records request form. The city can, when public records requests come in, they typically come into my office, and I ship them off to the office that might be housing, probably houses the records, and find out whether they have those records and how much time it would take to produce the records and whose time. Because we have now got a right to charge people for public records requests. So, for example, if we got a big public records request and they wanted a lot of information from the community development department, Derek might say, well, that's going to take 1.5 hours of Sherry's time and it'll be 41 copies. So we would charge 25 cents for each of the copies and then a prorated share of her hourly salary plus benefits. And so that's how we would assess the fee. And if it's, if a public records request is for something that exceeds $20, we ask for a deposit, a full deposit, before we go forward and produce those documents.
So one other thing to that, Peggy, is under the state law and under our provisions, there is the ability for someone to ask for a fee waiver.
Yeah.
Especially if it's in the public interest, like, for instance, the news media, and others that are not just going to be using those public records for their own interests, but they're going to make sure those are, records are communicated to the general public in the public's interest. And in that case, public bodies are allowed to consider a fee waiver under those circumstances.
Right. The city manager has the authority to waive the fees. And, you know, we have three levels of public records requests, and they are in our policy. And level one is so routine that typically I don't even see those level one requests. They're more like insurance companies wanting accident reports from the police department or somebody wanting a list of the businesses in the city. And there are set fees for those items and they go directly to the department. I feel like we get so many requests, like especially for accident reports, that we'd have to have a person working on that all the time, which we don't have the capacity for. So anyway, any questions on public records? Okay, we're going to go to ethics. And, you know, when I thought about, we were just talking about ethics tonight, I thought, what on earth are we going to talk about? Because ethics is pretty simple. Anybody who is an employee or a volunteer of the city is considered to be a public official under the Oregon government ethics law. And they need to adhere to the law. So basically the gist of the law is that it prohibits a public official from receiving financial gain or avoiding a financial detriment which results from their status, which they would not have had if they were not a public official. So that's the gist of it. You know, there are other components of the Oregon government ethics law that apply to nepotism. They apply to acceptance of gifts. They apply to conflicts of interest. And typically, we don't see that with volunteers. And honestly, we don't see conflicts of interest here rarely. I've been here 22 years, and I've seen it happen once, where somebody who was an employee had to come to council and say they had a conflict of interest. But anyway, any question on ethics? I bet David has something.
So on that, for the committees and the council and the planning commission, there's some other components. So for instance, there's the requirement to declare either a potential or actual conflict of interest if you're going to be participating in decisions. For the library board and our other committees who are only making recommendations, it's typically, if it ever arises, it would be a potential conflict of interest, which means it could be to the financial benefit or detriment of either that committee member or a relative or a business they're associated with or a household member. Sometimes we see it on the airport committee or the planning commission and a few others. And the planning commission sometimes can have an actual conflict of interest. But for the most part, if you do run across the situation where a vote you take might involve someone that you're related to or in business with that could benefit from it or could be a detriment, since you're not making a final decision, the cautious thing to do is just say, hey, I have a potential conflict of interest, explain the reason why you think you have one, and then by doing that, you can continue to deliberate and vote. That doesn't prevent you from participating. It's only when you have an actual conflict of interest, which means it's certain that you'll either benefit or have a detriment in a decision you make, that you have to recuse yourself. And that typically only happens on the city council and on occasion the planning commission if they're making final decisions. So in any event, that's something that for you to at least think about as a board member if it ever comes up. And if there's any questions about whether you think you will have a potential conflict of interest, I would recommend that you check with your staff person, Laura, and then she can either ask me or run it by some other folks and perhaps direct you to the appropriate person to talk to and the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, which, by the way, we have their most current handbook for public officials in the agenda packet for the library board meeting tonight that was revised in April of last year. So it's fairly recent. There's some contact information in there. And my recommendation to all the committees and also to the Council and Planning Commission is if you ever have a question regarding ethics, whether it's accepting gifts, whether it's a conflict of interest or anything else, the folks that actually know this issue the best are the staff people at the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, and they're there to actually answer questions for folks. And they especially like when someone asks them a question before an action is taken rather than afterwards, because sometimes those create other issues.
Yeah. So does anybody have any questions on ethics? Thanks for describing that more thoroughly, David. I appreciate it. If not, guess what side we're on? So thank you all for letting David and I attend your meeting tonight. And if you think of questions after your meeting, just shoot us an email and we will get back to you as quickly as possible. David and I work pretty well together. He's going to miss me when I'm gone because he and I like to argue.
For folks that don't know me very well, I served on the city council for close to 13 and a half years over a 20-year period. And Peggy's been city recorder that entire time. So we've gotten to know each other over 20 years period before I became city attorney. So that's why we can argue with one another and not worry about it. Right, Peggy?
Yeah. No, I look forward to it. Some days I miss you in the office if I just want to argue with somebody.
It's all in good fun.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you all. And just shoot us an email if you have messages. And I am going to stop the share right now. And I hope you have a successful meeting.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you, David, for making time to be here tonight.
Yeah, thanks. And okay, it looks like half my face was cut off on the Zoom when you were looking at me. I'm just looking at my video right now, so that's okay. You don't have to look at me. You can just hear what I have to say.
Okay, thank everybody. Thanks, everybody. I'm going to head home because I have another meeting tomorrow night.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize that we were live on TV, but that's very exciting. I'm sure we have lots of fans.
We've had one or two in the past watching our meetings, and then I get emails afterwards that they thought the meeting was very interesting.
Right?
Is it always the same people? Is it always like the same people? Is there a fan club?
We have a fan club.
Well, I'll try to mix up which of my flags I'm showing just to keep it interesting for people. Okay, so what I'd like to do next is go on to 4B, the library card policy revisions.
I provided you guys with two copies in this. One of them has, it's 2.2 library card policy revisions that has the track changes, so you can see where the proposed changes are. And then the other version is what it looks like with the accepted track changes. And what is on here, one of the big differences from the original policy is dealing with honor cards, which is under 2.2.7 honor card policies. Is dealing with our honor card holders having access to all of the library's online services and resources except for Hoopla. This was not possible before. And we have a number of individuals who are an honor card, particularly members of our in-house community. And so that is the difference with that section. And then under 2.2.11 card in hand requirement, 2.2.10 card expiration and renewal, we changed it from 3 years to 2 years, and that's a library best practice. And I wanted to make sure that we are following best practices when we're doing this with record retention. We usually keep people who've been in the system for 5 years before we clean up the system because you want to make sure you have accurate records to tell an accurate picture. And when you don't have updated records, you're not given an accurate depiction of what's going on. So that's the big difference in that section. And then the next section is 2.2.11, which is the card in hand requirement and expectations. I added the word and. So I don't know if you have any questions about any of the proposed revisions, but I wanted to point that out to you.
Is there any discussion about the proposals, Melly?
My question has to do with just the phrasing, because what if you, I mean, are you still in the editing phase, right?
Yes, we can still edit.
Yeah, okay. So what if you, that phrase of the an honor card, what if it was a patron without a permanent address can receive an honor card providing identification, personal identification?
Read it one more time to me, Melly.
So I don't know what my volume's at. Let me see. I don't know where my volume is. Okay. Oh, there you go. Okay, so it would be a patron without a permanent address may receive an honor card when providing identification. That way you eliminate the as long as, and it makes it, you eliminate the may be issued.
So it would say a patron without a permanent home address may receive an honor card as long as they can provide identification.
Well, you would just say with or by providing identification, or yeah, that way you don't have to do as long as they can. By, it would be by providing identification.
Any other suggestions?
Because that makes it just sound positive, you know, because that's what we want to do that for them.
Madeline, do you need us to repeat the suggested change by Melly? Because we will have to put that in the minutes.
What it, sure. What it says, let me know when you're ready, Maddie, is a patron without a permanent home address may receive an honor card by providing identification.
Got it. I guess I do have a comment. The original, the first sentence really kind of flowed, you know, the second sentence flowed well with that first sentence. And I'm just, when I'm just looking at this paragraph in whole now, I'm wondering if, in recognition of the fact that not all people have a permanent home address, Newport Public Library offers an honor card. And then read the new one.
A patron without a permanent home address may receive an honor card by providing identification.
Yeah. That flows too.
Do we need sentence one
I'm wondering that.
I don't think so. I mean, you could really just kind of take out the whole first sentence right now and just leave it as is with an honor. It starts with an honor card may be issued to patrons without a permanent address as long as they can provide ID. It's like pretty straightforward, and that seems also pretty positive. You know, it doesn't seem negative.
I think Melly's sounds more positive personally. I'm wondering if it could stand alone and then move on to only two items at a time may be checked out on an honor card.
Or if we rephrase that sentence.
You put public library. That way you include the library in there. If you wanted to do that.
Or take out the only two items, reword that and say honor card holders may check out only two items at a time. Instead of starting with only two items, because that seems like a weird way to start the sentence. What do you guys think about that?
How about it just say an honor card may check out two items and take the only out altogether?
Yeah. Or up to two items.
It would probably be just the two.
Okay.
Or if it says honor card holders may check out two items.
Yeah.
Straight the point. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want me to read it to you again, the entire paragraph? And so you guys can see what you think.
Yes.
Okay. So a patron without a permanent home address may receive an honor card by providing identification. Honor card holders may check out two items. Honor card holders have access to all of the library's online services and resources except Hoopla. No interlibrary loans are permitted on an honor card.
Would it make sense to say online services and resources except for Hoopla and interlibrary loans? Or are those different things?
They're different, totally different services.
Okay.
You want to keep those separate because it might cause confusion and then people are going to think that ILLs are online resources.
Okay. All right, that makes sense to me. Okay, any other comments on the wording or thoughts or suggestions? I think it makes sense to vote these in one at a time so it's clear from the notes. So do we have a motion on... Section 2.27 honor card policy.
Yeah, I make a motion. I forgot, sorry.
So Melly, I assume that you're making a motion to alter the policy to the language that Laura just read, and that language will be included in the minutes.
Yes.
Okay, we need a second.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Maddie, that section passes unanimously. And Maddie, do you have the language or do you want Laura to email it to you?
I think I have it written down.
Perfect. Okay, so we're now moving on to section 2.2.11, card in hand requirement and exceptions.
Oh, go up above.
Sorry, 2.2.10, card expiration and renewal. And this, we're changing the period that people have to update their card. Is it from 3 to 2 or 2 to 3?
2 to 3. That's library standards. Just trying to align with library standards.
So we're actually giving people longer time between renewals.
And that's become even more apparent with the global pandemic.
Any thoughts on 3 versus 2 years?
It seems pretty straightforward, and reasonable.
So, Stormy, are you making a motion to approve?
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm making a motion to approve the change from 2 to 3 years. That's, yeah, absolutely.
And so we'll need a second.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so Maddie, 2.2.10 passes unanimously, and that brings us now to 2.2.11. It's weird to say that. Card in hand requirement and exceptions. I'm just gonna go ahead and make a motion that we fix the grammar here and add the word and. Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second that.
So Maddie, Stormy is the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, so that passes as well. So I believe that's all the library card policy revisions proposed tonight, correct? Laura's
it is. I kept it. Yes. I kept it short because we were having Peggy and David here.
So I thought we'd go ahead and finish our discussion items because they might take some extra time. So that brings us to 4C, Lincoln County Library District Funding Model Fact Sheet. So I know that Laura has included this for everyone. Is there any comments that you want to discuss?
This was the fact sheet that I had talked to you guys about during our last meeting that I was sent, and I wanted to attach it in public record just to help you guys summarize what was discussed. Please let me know if you have questions. If you're not comfortable asking those questions now, you can send me an email. And if I don't know the answer, I can get the answers for you. I've done that for a couple of our other library board members too.
Okay, seeing no questions or discussion, we're gonna go ahead and pass that. I'm unaware of any public that's here for public comment tonight. None on Zoom, no. Laura's shaking her head, no. So that brings us all the way back to the beginning, approval of the minutes. Has anyone had a chance to review Ellen's minutes from last week?
There's a couple of small little things. Under five with librarian report, and I've already made these changes, Ellen, so I can make the updates on the minutes that you sent me. Sarah's last name is V-A-U-G-H-N, so I fixed that. And then there's an extra period after the number 7.
Okay, well, with those minor changes, although I guess maybe to Sarah they're not minor, do we have a motion to accept the minutes?
Go ahead.
So Maddie, Stormy's moved to accept the minutes and Melly has seconded it. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so we've approved last month's minutes. Okay, Laura, you have 14 minutes to enjoy for all the things you want to tell us.
I'm going to touch on things in the report. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to be able to read through, and I don't want to just read off of what I have here. But a couple things to make you guys aware of. We had in-person interviews last week for our librarian one, which is their adult services and outreach librarian. And we've offered the position to a candidate right now, and we're going through that process right now. I will keep you posted on where we stand. We also had phone interviews for our bilingual community resource specialist, which is a part-time position. And we ended up reposting that position after we had a couple unsuccessful candidates. They needed full-time versus part-time. And so now the position closes on March 14th. So if you guys know anybody in the community that you think would be a good fit, please recommend that they check this out. So I want to tell you guys about that. And then I had told you previously that the library was awarded a grant from Oregon Humanities, and it's called Consider This, and it's a mini grant for rural libraries. And we're going to have a program. You guys are going to start seeing publicity, and I'm going to send it to you. It's going to be on May 19th. It's going to be at the Performing Arts Center, and we're going to have a discussion with a panel, four panelists that are made up of different community members as well as a moderator, question and answer, and then there'll be light beverages and finger foods offered afterwards. And I will tell you the time. I'm just trying to get all this stuff secure right now. But the people who are going to be on the panel are Tracy Flowers, who's the executive director of Grace Wins, as well as Karen Gray, who is the Lincoln County School District Superintendent. I have Kathy Sewell, who she used to work for Shangri-La, and you guys, I don't know if you're aware, Shangri-La was bought out. And so Kathy's with this new company who bought them out, and she's going to be representing adults with diverse abilities, which I think will be great. And then we have Jose, who is on our Library Foundation board, and he's a high school student, and he's identifies as BIPOC, and he's going to be on the panel. And then Alex Yuma Kinga, who's well-known in our community, he's agreed to be our moderator for the program. And it'll be taped, but you're going to start seeing a lot of publicity with this. It'll be taped and made available on our website. And Oregon Humanities is really excited about this, too. And Oregon Humanities and then the National Endowment of Humanities were the supporters of this grant. So I'm really excited about that. We also applied actually submitted it today with the State Library. They have a teen intern grant for the summer. And so they're offering 10 of these grants to 10 public libraries in the state. And so we are applying to see if we can get a teen intern. And they have to be between the ages of 16 and 19. They need to be a high school student, not somebody who already regularly uses the library, so not our current like teen volunteer base, because it's kind of an opportunity to do workforce development and introduce library land to them and see if this is something that they may want to go into in the future. We'll know April 1st, so keep your fingers crossed. I'll let you guys know, because we have to get the application in by the 15th. And so Linda was submitting it this afternoon. And then we also applied for another Oregon Humanities grant under the foundation for a public programming grant, which I'm really, really excited about this, because we got a lot of community support as far as partnerships. The OSU Extension Office is involved in this. Food Share of Lincoln County, Newport Food Pantry, a couple of our different grocery stores that are here in town. We have people who are in our community who are willing to donate their interpretation and translation time to be able to help us with this. But basically, we're trying to get a curiosity cabinet into the library. And curiosity cabinets used to be used they've been around for a long, long time, like since the Renaissance. And they used to be a space where people were typically upper class folks would be able to display items from their adventures, okay? And we don't want to do that, but we have a lot of segments in our community that I don't think people know are here in a lot of cultures. And one of our strategic plan goals relates to kind of opening up people's minds and learning about other cultures. So our curiosity cabinet would be focusing on like seeds and gardening, like microgreens and herbs. And there would be recipes in there and information, and it would have panels with explaining what a curiosity cabinet is. And the exhibit would change quarterly because we'd be focusing on different segments of the community. But on top of that, we would be doing food demos over at the OSU Extension Office to tie in with that. And it would be taught by members of that community. So Sachiko, for example, she's from Japan, but she's also lived in South Korea. She would be cooking items and explaining what she's doing to people as they're watching that, and using the seeds that are in the curiosity cabinet to highlight something from her culture and how she uses it in the food. And those recipes would be shared. So we'd have different segments, like we'd have somebody who speaks Mandarin. We'd have somebody from Guatemala, Alex. We would have Beatrice, who's from Mexico. We have people from the Philippines. We'd have different cultures that are represented. So we'd have like an opening exhibit for the curiosity cabinet explaining what it is. And then we'd have four different programs over at the OSU Extension Office. And two of those would have four demos, cooking demos involved with it. And then we'd have a closing reception for the Curiosity Cabinet for the year. The hope is that we'd be able to keep it going longer than that. But then you would also have like a recipe contest involving kids and adults, what they learned, as well as having a growing contest of bringing those seeds home and trying things out. We're really excited, really, really excited. Rotary also supported this too, the Rotary Club. They're also another partner. So we'll find out near, I think, the end of April whether we get it. And I'm really hopeful because Oregon Humanities was really excited about this and this idea, and you're identifying a need in our community, and we're opening the world to other cultures that are in our community that people may not know or hear. And having community conversations, and food's a way that we can connect people. So I will keep you posted about that, but I'm really excited about that. And I didn't get it in the report before I could tell you guys that, so I wanted to tell you on the meeting.
Sounds awesome. It sounds so awesome. I am actually in the OSU Extension Master Gardener Apprenticeship Program right now, and I totally want to be involved in it. That it goes through, and maybe even if the grant doesn't go through, there's still a way to do it. Like, it just is such an awesome, awesome idea.
We're really hoping that we can find another avenue if it doesn't go through, but I feel pretty good about it. And I have, we're getting seeds from Food Hero through the OSU Extension office. And so I have like 500 seeds in my office right now. Beatrice has a bunch of seeds in her office that we're going to put in the Curiosity Cabinet. And then we'd have information about this too. And then we'd also have the information out in just not just English, but in Spanish. And if we can get it in Mandarin, and if there's a way to offer like interpretive services in sign language, if we can do something like that during the program, we want to be able to do that too. So I built that into the grant, and we're going to hope. But it would be a really cool. It'd be really cool.
So fantastic.
Really cool.
That's great. Go, Laura, go. Awesome.
The other cool thing I want to point out to you guys, too, I sent you guys an email about the library distributing free COVID at-home tests in partnership with the Lincoln County Public Health. And we hand out one kit, which has two tests per household member. And we're distributing these during library hours at the circulation desk. And it hasn't been as crazy as you think it would be. It's steady. You have a couple people who come in. It's not crazy, so you don't have like a line out the door. And it seems to be going well with that. So I want to tell you guys about that. And then one of the other really cool things that we were able to figure out is we have mobile printing now available at your library.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that.
So yeah. You can be at home and you there's an app, or we have a link where you can go to, and then you can print from your house, but you'll have to come into the library, and we have a little print set up downstairs. You would put your name or your email, whatever you would put it underneath when you send it to the library, and then you put the money in the little and then your print job would come out. And it holds it in the queue for 24 hours. So we're really excited about that. We just figured that out. Linda, Lily, and I are going to be going to the Public Library Association Conference. This is a big national conference in Portland for March 23rd to the 24th. I'll be up there a little bit longer. And we're really, really excited. This year we don't have the Oregon Library Association Conference because we have the big national one. But there's going to be librarians from all over, and they're going to do a social over at the Kennedy School on Tuesday night with librarians from Oregon that have won on Jeopardy. And we're going to do trivia.
Cool.
Yeah. And there's a lot of really great sessions. So I will have follow-up with you guys regarding what I learned when I went and what sessions Lily and Linda also attended. I'll be sharing that with you guys. It's pretty exciting.
But come into the library and run amok when Vanessa is in charge.
Be nice to my Vanessa. You guys will be good to her. And talking about Vanessa, she also attended a 3D printing class in February because she's trying to understand more about our 3D printer and some of the issues that we've had with it. And so she attended a class at the Lincoln City campus for the Oregon Community College, and she learned a lot. that she's been able to bring back to the library. And I don't know if you guys have had an opportunity to poke your head in the teen room, but you should. You should see the 3D printer, and then you should look above the double doors in the teen room, and you should see all the creations that the teens have made. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
It's cool. That's a great room. It's a very welcoming room for people, I think.
It is, and we've had 40 to 50 teenagers that come to the library after, and you can't fit all of them in the teen room safely, especially during a pandemic. So we've had to create overflow areas because we're definitely the happening place to be for our local teenagers
right
now.
That's a good problem to have.
It is, and they're really respectful. They're good kids, really good kids.
So our historical library moment for you all this week is that the team room was actually an add-on to the remodel at the very last minute and funded completely by the foundation. It was kind of controversial to add it. It was very advocated for by the staff. In fact, several staff members gave up their offices in order to make it. I'm not sure they're happy about that decision today, but they generously did it at the time, and I'm just really excited to see it be utilized so much.
That's awesome.
I love it. It's wonderful. We've been doing the Help Community Clothing Drive since October, and this month we're collecting undergarments for students that are in kindergarten through 12th grade, new items only. But I want to put that out there. If you guys happen to go to the store and you want to help our local youth, we have a drop-off location at the library, but we also have it over at Parks and Rec because they're also a distribution point now too. So letting you guys know about that. You already know about the Libros for Oregon. More of the books are arriving. It's been delayed this year because of COVID, even more with some of those books arriving. And then a lot of the vendors that we purchase books from were on vacation for the whole month of January. So we're going to have more materials that are coming in. But if you want to stop by and look at what has come in, I would love to show you. They're pretty amazing. But there's several more books that are still supposed to show up on that. And there's a picture I put in the report with Beatrice and Margarita. They both came over to the library to check out the books and got really excited. So I got them down in the children's department so I could take a picture with them. Millie, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I was good. I don't know, is my mic on? Oh, yeah, it is. I was going to mention regarding your curiosity closet, right? At Taft High School, we have an award-winning culinary program, and Julia Westbrook is the curator of it. I mean, she's been doing it for a number of years. She might be somebody to touch base with and see about the culinary students doing recipes or doing cooking.
Would you be willing to...
I can give you her.
Yeah, will you send me that, Millie? Because I can reach out to her. That would be wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, and they have won amazing recognition for what they've done. And so I think that'd be really cool to get more kids involved.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
So what we have left in our packet is mainly statistics. Are there any statistics in particular that anyone has a question about? Or that you would like Laura to highlight?
I would like to know how many Oregon librarians have actually been on Jeopardy. Is this going to be like a huge number of people?
There's like six of them. There's six of them in Oregon, which is kind of fun.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy? There's six of them. They're able to get in touch with all six of them. So they're going to come to the Kennedy School and hang out with a bunch of Oregon librarians.
Oh my God, I love that. I'm sorry. I feel that's of statistical relevance.
Agreed.
Do you have any questions about any of the statistical information that I put in the packet for you guys? The one thing I should tell you is I don't have the database statistics for February yet. Lily was still working on trying to get that information, so that's why it's only through January right now. And I'm hoping when I see you in May that I'll have February and March to show you.
Okay, so if there aren't any questions about the statistics, that brings us to the end of our agenda. Are there any questions, comments, concerns anyone would like to bring up for the good of the order before I adjourn the meeting?
Sorry, I have one just quick request, and that is, Laura, Peggy had mentioned that she was going to share the PowerPoint with you, and I would like to get a copy of that when she does.
Okay, I can do that, and then I can send you guys, I can send everybody the PowerPoint when she sends it to me, and then I'll also send you David and Peggy's email, so if you guys want to reach out to them with questions, you have their contact information. Does that sound okay?
Awesome.
So the library
board's
next meeting is Wednesday, May 11th. And so we're looking forward to seeing any of you who happen to be able to make it here in person with Laura and I in the council chambers. But if for whatever reason it works out better for your life to continue to appear by Zoom, I think this has been very successful. And so I think the opinion of our committee should be that you can appear by Zoom at your own leisure. Leisure is the wrong word. I don't know.
And we don't have to
insert the appropriate word that I cannot think of.
And we don't have to wear masks after Saturday the 12th. They'll be optional. So I'll throw that out there too. But you guys can sit over here with Gretchen and the beautiful flags.
That's right. I will share my flags. There's lots of pretty artwork too. I like that one over there, and it's never been highlighted. So we'll have to get someone to sit over there. Yeah, there's lots of beautiful artwork. Yes, Ellen.
Just a compliment for you, Gretchen. You really moved us through this meeting and chop, chop, chop. And that is awesome. I like it when it moves.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. And it'll be nice to see you all.
Thank you so much. Gretchen, sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I just want to say thank you. I'm just in awe. My sons have always loved the library, and when we traveled the coast, we would get, you know, guest cards so they could check them out when we were camping stuff. I just think it's fabulous what you do. So thank you so much for being here for us. It's wonderful.
You're very welcome. My goal is to make a difference, even if it's a small difference.
You are making big differences.
Yes,
you really are.
Yes.
Good job, Laura.
So at our in-person meeting, masks are at your own discretion. It does feel a little weird to sit in this huge building with only Laura and I with our masks on. But yeah, I couldn't hit her with this pen that I have in my hand if I threw it at her. But we are safe. Okay, well, with that, I'm going to officially adjourn our meeting at 6:19. Pretty good. And we'll see you guys all in May.
All right. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for being here, Dietmar.
Yes, thank you, Dietmar.
No problemo. It's just the joy of my life to be at the library board meeting.
Well, we like seeing you. We do like seeing you.
We know that we are your favorite committee.
Yeah, we had a long council meeting last night, or Monday night. And then there was other meetings last night and tonight. And so it just never stops. The joy never stops. See you guys.
Bye. Bye. Appreciate you being here, Dietmar.
Bye. Bye.